Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. On May 9th, all of Russia commemorates victory over fascism in Europe in 1945. Memories of heroism and unspeakable suffering have been passed down from generation to generation. The West has attempted to rewrite this history. Russians will never accept their sacrifices were in vain. Crosstalking victory over fascism, I'm joined by my guest, Aaron Good in Philadelphia. He's a political scientist, historian, and author of American Exception, Empire in the Deep State. In Providence, we have Vladimir Goldstein. He is the chair of the Department of Slavic Studies at Brown University. And here in Moscow, we have Sonia Van Den Ender. She is an independent journalist. All right, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Vladimir, let me speak with you, because you and I have talked about this before over the years about revisionism. So I want to ask you a personal question here. You were born in the Soviet Union. You were brought up in the Soviet Union. And you clearly remember commemorating victory. Day on May 9th. What does your memory tell you? Was there ever a disparaging comment about the Western allies and their participation in the war? Because I have never heard that in the quarter century that I've lived here. The Russian Federation has always acknowledged the role that Western allies played. Obviously, they focus more on their contribution. But the West doesn't want to acknowledge the suffering that the Soviet Union experienced during that horrific conflict. Vladimir.
Yeah, growing up in Russia, of course it was a holiday, very big holiday, the day off, it was very, May was festive. Festive time. 1st of May was, day off, 8th and 9th of May were great days. So country was celebrating and everyone was celebrating. It was one of those holidays. I remember I have friends who were dissidents. They didn't like this, the system. And yet, if I would forget to call them on the 9th of May and to congratulate them, they would be offended because they went through the war, they knew what it was, and they remembered that. It was like a very important solemn holiday. Many cultures, many, traditions have these holidays of remembering, and that's what sort of Russia did. And of course, it's very kind of discouraging, if not not to say offensive, to see what was going on in the West, and it's been going on for a while. Yeah. Just somehow kind of to present Russians as incompetent, a bunch of people who didn't know what they were doing, who won like by jumping under the guns and dying in droves, and somehow kind of just to do all of that to diminish it. Of course, people who went through the war, French, Americans, Germans, they remember, they know. But it was like a concerted effort to brainwash the younger generation. I remember I had a friend, a colleague, a historian who was in Germany, and he was just celebrating something. There was like people sitting in the bar drinking their beer. And he said there were like some young Germans making fun of Russians, and some grim-looking old Germans say, "What the hell are you talking about? That was a serious war. That's the way we're destroyed." So he witnessed it already with his own eyes in Germany, which was probably like 25 years ago. We can imagine how bad it is now.
Well, Aaron, it has gotten very, very bad because over the years, and particularly since 2014 with the illegal change of power in Ukraine, there's this presentation that Ukraine defeated Nazi Germany, which, of course, it didn't. It wasn't an independent country at the time. But almost at every single level, there's this attempt to diminish the Soviet war effort, which is it boggles the mind, losing 27 million people in your own country, and the West treats it as if it was an afterthought. Saving Private Ryan, the war was over. Go ahead, Aaron.
Right. The Soviet losses in the war are the number that I've seen more often is 26.6 million, which rounds up to 27 million. And the losses for the U.S. are 400,000, with 200,000 in each theater, Pacific and European, more or less. So that means that if you round the Soviets up to 27 million, that's a 400,000 rounding error, which is how much the U.S. lost. So the U.S. rounding error, the rounding error for the Soviets really is the loss of the U.S. in the war, which isn't to diminish how awful it would have been to be, you know, fighting in Okinawa or on D-Day. But it's to say that the sacrifices that the Soviets made in World War II are unequaled in human history to defeat Nazism. And this is probably something that the many Soviets would be bitter about in retrospect, and Russians today, because the effect of that war, World War II, and the enormous Soviet sacrifices was really to hand the U.S. Empire over global capitalism and the former colonial empires, or soon to be former and empires in the global South. This paved the way for the U.S. to become a global juggernaut unrivaled in human history, I think, the power that the U.S. had after World War II. They basically absorbed the Axis into their own global capitalist system.
You know, Sonia, one of the things, you know, in the way I presented this program, introduced this program, is, again, very different than the narrative that you'll find in the West. There was victory over fascism, over an ideology. Okay, now what you'll get, if it's remembered in the West, victory over Germany, okay, over the Germans, okay? Mm-hmm. But it was an ideological struggle, and for many people, and it's very offensive, and I'm glad that Vladimir used that word here, is that many in Russia feel today that they're fighting the same ideological foe all over again. Sonia.
Yeah, that's right, because I myself am from Europe. And they are claiming that, you know, it's fascism and Nazism, but they use the term German all the time, but actually it's Nazism and fascism, that's what we know. And also there's something very weird going on in Europe, because already in 2019, the EU passed a resolution saying that actually the war was started through the Ribbentrop and Molotov agreement, that the war was started also by Russia. So, I mean, and that there were two totalitarian states, that was Russia and that was Germany, as exactly how they call it. So as from that time, but actually already before, we can see that Europe is a very, yeah, they try to do revisionism. This is what we see all the time, and it's getting worse by the day. Like today, Ursula von der Leyen, she is in Kiev.
Yep.
And yeah, it's crazy, of course, in her outfit with yellow and blue, of course, and claiming that now, or Zelensky is also claiming that we have now racism, not Nazism, but racism again, also racism. That's what he told yesterday in a very funny video. I saw that. So, I mean, Europe is rewriting history, not only this, they are denying actually that a large part of Europe were liberated by the Soviet Union, the Red Army, the Russians, and actually there are living a lot of people in Germany who also commemorate the 9th of May, and there was a whole debate going on there, and I think in some places they could show the flag and they could commemorate, but of course Ukrainians complained again. But this is really very terrible what is going on. And it is what I hear. It's increasingly, yeah, it's frightening, actually. I can see comparisons between now and 1945, because Russophobia is very, very terrible in Europe. And this is what they did with the Jews in the Second World War, or the opposition. You know?
Absolutely right. And what I call it basically liberal authoritarianism, liberal fascism, mm-hmm. even is appropriate, I think, now. Vladimir, put this into context here, because, you know, we're having this revisionism going on. It's really quite extraordinary. The Nazi Soviet pact of 1939, it is portrayed in the media as an alliance. But, I mean, it wasn't an alliance, okay? I'm just picking one of hundreds of possible examples here. But they're always conflating the two here. And you know what it does, Vladimir? It lets fascism off the hook. That's what it's doing. It's actually rehabilitating it slowly but surely, Vladimir.
Yeah, it, you know, this idea of equivalence is very obnoxious. You know, we should study and be appalled and try to prevent the best we can, you know, what Nazis were standing for, you know, racism, destruction of anyone whom they didn't like, whom they declared, you know, Untermensch. That's what we have to fight. Of course, you know, if you're not happy with the way Stalin was treating people, but socialism, fine, that's a different issue. But to draw the equivalence between the countries, it's absolutely unacceptable, because basically, you know, first of all, you know, we ended up being, you know, allies. England, United States, Russia, they were allies. They were fighting this absolutely unmitigated evil, which were targeting concrete groups of people, Slavs, Jews, Gypsies, homosexuals, you name it. They would destroy them. So this is what we have to fight for. And to try to somehow obfuscate the whole thing and bring the equivalence and muddy the waters is absolutely unacceptable. And including this particular, you know, it was non-war agreement. They decided not to attack each other. It doesn't mean that they were allies. So just confuse these issues while at the same time, you know, it was a British government who more or less gave on the platter Czech Republic to Germany and agreed, you know, Munich agreement. That was all done by Europeans. So it's the same thing. We can, you know, if you want to have the same argument, you can say that was made possible. Capitalism and Anglo-Saxon world is equivalent of Nazism, if they're going to argue like that.
You know, Aaron, what is the point of rewriting this history? Well, why do they want to erase Russia, the Soviet war experience?
Well, the fundamental geopolitical issue for the Anglos, you know, the Atlanticists, is to make sure that Germany and Russia are not united with a, you know, Russian raw materials and manpower and then German industry. And so this is why you had them. I mean, this goes back to World War One and the fears of a Berlin-Baghdad railway, and blowing up the Nord Stream or setting up the military-industrial complex in the early 1950s because of dollar flow problems. They really wanted to quarantine.
I have to go to a hard break, and after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on victory over fascism 78 years ago. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing victory over fascism 78 years ago. Okay, let's go back to Sonia here in Moscow. Sonia, my father fought in the Second World War. He was at Iwo Jima in Okinawa, and he very rarely talked about it because it was just so horrific. It was what he saw, what he experienced. But he still was interested in the history of the conflict, and we watched together. I was quite young at the time, but we watched The World at War, and it was a documentary series about the Second World War, the entire war around the world, and it was a British documentary. And it's one of the greatest documentaries ever made. But you know what, Sonia? You probably can't find it anymore, okay? Because it's basically slowly but surely being deleted from the ether, okay? Every single episode was on YouTube 10 years ago. Now you can find maybe one or two, okay? And you know why? It's because it gave a balanced view of the Soviet experience during the war. That is verboten now. Sorry for the German. Go ahead in Moscow here, Sonia.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, but that's true. I mean, me, myself, I'm from the Netherlands, and we always celebrate liberation of Nazism on the 5th of May. So that was last week somehow. And on the 4th of May, there's the remembrance of all the dead or the fallen. And what did Prime Minister Rutte from the Netherlands do? He invited Zelensky to be on this evening where supposedly we commemorate all the people who were fighting for us and fallen. And there was one very special person in the Netherlands. She is called Hanni Schaft. She was a communist, so they will not remember her. They wiped her out. And this guy, this Zelensky, was standing at the statue somehow in Amsterdam at the Dam. And then they said, oh yeah, we have to commemorate all the dead people in Ukraine. This is what they do in Europe. And a lot of things, what you said on YouTube, like The World on War, I watched it too. And you cannot find it anymore. And there's a lot of things now going on. It's what is rewriting history. So they now focus on these days when, you know, they commemorate the Second World War. They focus on Ukraine. And this is, I mean, there's so many people died for this in Russia, but also in Europe, like my grandfather, too. He was hiding for the Germans. I mean, he lived in Rotterdam. There was a very heavy bombardment. And afterwards, he had to work in Germany, and he was hiding out in with people. So, and they don't commemorate this at all. They rewrite it everything. And it was a very interesting thing what said about Germany. In Germany, the industry is something else. But in Germany, the industry is down 80% now already. So, I mean, and this is all... You know it. It's all called the Great Reset, and the worst country you have in this is the Netherlands and Germany, of course. What they said since the First World War, they have to keep Germany as a sort of enemy. So when you think about this all together, then it's clear they want to wipe out the commemoration of the Second World War, about communism, about Russia. So actually, we are in a very bad state at the moment, and especially Europe is facing this.
Well, Sonia, I'm a full supporter, a backer of your farmers, you know, the greatest mm-hmm. farmers on the planet, and they want to put them out of business. It's insane. It's totally insane. The best farmers in the world. Okay, Vladimir, going back to our topic here, I mean, denying the rightful victory of the Soviet Union 78 years ago, it's part of a process of nothing possibly good can come out of Russia. And that's why you don't talk about beating the Nazis, okay? Because obviously, I think even the neoliberals were not going to stand up for them, at least openly. But so there's virtue in victory over that ideology and that horrific regime here. Because at the end of the day, you know, and Aaron looks like he's pretty good with the numbers here. By the time of the Normandy landing, the outcome of the war in Europe was obvious to everyone. Vladimir.
Yeah, I think what Aaron also mentioned, and it's absolutely correct, is like we're talking about, if you wish, the whole agenda of Cold War. And the Cold War was more or less about, you know, fight for the hearts and minds of Europeans. You know, let's remember that right after the war, France and Italy and other countries were more or less very, they have very prominent communist parties. And Anglo-Saxon got absolutely scared. So there was an absolutely massive campaign with endless amount of money channeled through CIA to the Europe, trying to convince Europeans that that's already started, that the Russians make nothing, produce nothing, contribute nothing, great achievements. Nobody wants to deny great American achievements, but they began to promote great American artists, Louis Armstrong, you know, Jackson Pollock, only when they got scared of Russians. Before that, they wouldn't allow Louis Armstrong to play in Mississippi, but then they would place him to play in Paris just to impress the Europeans that they are very good and Russians are just brutal barbarians. And this thing continues, and it became very important, I think, nowadays, because there is a new threat on the horizon, is China. And China can sort of somehow win Europe, win this. So it's again an attempt to control Europeans, to prove that don't go to Russia, don't go to all those communists, obey us, buy our product, which is five times more expensive, destroy your economy, do your own thing. So it's continuation, unfortunately, it's continuation of the Cold War. And the real war, the war against Nazism, is somehow pushed and spinned in the direction the Western propaganda wants to go.
You know, Aaron, you know, the Western audiences don't understand because they're grossly underinformed about history and contemporary politics. But I'll give you the take from Moscow. So let's look at the countries that are aligned against with sanctions, you know, trying to weaken Russia as much as possible, as the Secretary of Defense said. But if you're in Moscow, you know what it looks like? It looks like this grand coalition Oh, the same coalition that was against the Soviet Union. It's remarkably similar, okay? Except for the West is far stronger because the United States is involved from the beginning, not in 1939, but 41. So that, you know, it's that because of this lack of understanding or willingly not understanding history, you can't see how the other guy, the other state, your opponent, your adversary can see the world. But that's what people see here, Aaron.
Right. I mean, the reason that the Germans and the Japanese and Italians went with this fascist system is because their establishment of capitalist oligarchs felt that they were threatened, and that the only way to survive was to just start murdering all the opponents of the capitalist oligarchy. And so they formed this pact, and they called it the Anti-Comintern Pact. That's the real name for the Axis. And so they defined themselves by opposition to capitalism. I mean, sorry, opposition to communism. And then after the war, the U.S. basically picks up, absorbs all the worst thugs and murderers and terrorists among the Japanese and Italian fascists and the Nazis, and uses them to murder on behalf of U.S. empire afterwards. So you could say the U.S. took over management of global capitalism. That's obvious. But you can also say they basically absorbed global fascism and are now still to this day murdering the opponents of U.S. capitalism.
You know, Sonia, one of the things I find most odious and disgusting is that demonizing Russia or trying to erase Russia, but what was fought against and destroyed, thankfully, in 1945, has reared its ugly head with Western support in Kiev, okay? And you know, it's happened so many times since the conflict started, where you have an Azov patch here and a Bandera picture there, and everyone kind of stumbles, oh, it doesn't really mean anything. It means a lot. It means a whole lot, okay? And this shows an attempt by the West to whitewash history, because what was fought against and destroyed is very real, and it's not being fought against now. It's actually being supported with tens of billions of dollars. Sonia.
Yeah, that's right. And I was in the Azov steel factory when it was just liberated with the special military operation. And you could see all the remnants of Nazism there, the SS signs, Mein Kampf, everything was there. So, and I saw throughout the Donbas, we could see everywhere, you know, the evidence of that they're really true Nazis, neo-Nazis, or whatever you want to call it. And the Western media and politicians, I think before the special military operation started, they knew, because they had some articles in, I think it was BBC or other newspapers and TV stations. They already said, yes, Ukraine has a problem because there are neo-Nazis. And they have. And I reported also in 2016 and 2017 that I was in Odessa, the commemoration of the Union House that murders them. And I saw the Azov regiment there. I saw Pravdy sector there. I saw Svoboda there. They were harassing all the Russian people, or even me as a journalist who was walking on the street, harassing them and, you know, shouting things. And already I saw the priests there who took off their robes when they were finished with their flag ceremony, and harassing people. So I think that the West is denying it, but they know that they are supporting neo-Nazis, like they did in Syria. They supported Daesh, ISIS. So they know it. And, you know, they're just whitewashing all the things that, oh, no, maybe, you know, they changed. They're now different. And this is what they're trying to say.
Oh, yeah. I remember Vladimir Zelensky was interviewed by some Western outlet, and he was confronted by, you know, you have this, you know, Nazi, neo-Nazi problem. And you know what his answer was? They are who they are. That's the best he could come up with. Last 50 seconds go to you, Vladimir. Go ahead.
Yeah, they came up with this kind of token, shibboleth, claiming that Zelensky is a Jew. And this is like, therefore, there is no Nazism. You know, they erect monuments all over Ukraine to all this, like, Nazi collaborators. You know, in Germany, you cannot do that. That's where I see very hypocritical. In the Western Europe, you cannot do that. But in Ukraine, it goes all around the country, day in, day out. They change the streets in the name of these thugs. And you know why? Because unfortunately, that's the only battle, unifying battle cry in Ukraine is ultra-nationalism. And that's what they do, and the West condones this. So that's from a Russian perspective, from normal perspective, from anti-war perspective, it looks actually absolutely unbelievable. And many, you know, I'm surprised that not enough Jews are protesting it, but that's a different story, I guess.
Yes, but, you know, if you can whitewash history and erase it, then you can praise these people at no cost. That's why we need to remember. All right, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Providence, Philadelphia, and here in Moscow. And I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.